Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just complete the sweep of the Colorado Rockies. They win 10-2 tonight. They outscore the Rockies 29-4, I believe, throughout the entire series. It was an absolute massacre. The Red Sox do what they had to do. They beat up on the bad team, and now they've got an important series against the Rays before they hit the All-Star break. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm here with Terry Cushman and Chris Felico, and guys, I think, you know, this series, it's pretty much what you expected. Really bad team coming in, the worst team in baseball, maybe historically the worst team in baseball. We were talking about it a bit on last night's show that they might lose close to 130 games. I mean, this Colorado team is really pathetic, but at the end of the day, the Red Sox did what they had to do. So how are you guys feeling?
I'm feeling good. I mean, like you said, they're a pretty pathetic team, but we made them look pathetic. So I think that's important because the Sox have struggled to beat the teams they should beat. So pleasantly surprised. It's what we expected, but I also wouldn't have been shocked if we lost one of these games, or God forbid, two out of three. So I'm stoked. What about you, Terry?
Well, we outscored them 29-7 across the three games. Somehow they made the Red Sox look like what we thought the Dodgers were on paper before the start of the season. It looked like we had the $500 million payroll. Like, that's just how bad they were. And, I mean, it felt like everybody had a home run. I know they didn't, but, I mean, Romy was crushing their right-handed pitching. Hit that bomb there in the, might have been the final inning, in the eighth inning. And, you know, it is what it is, but I'm still annoyed because just so many fans across the social media platform, Red Sox fans, really seem to believe this is real life.
Yeah, it's easy to get lost in it because it is fun when, you know, you score 29 runs in three games and the offense is popping off. The starting pitching looks great. Brian Bayo with a complete game last night. Giolito with a clean game tonight. And, you know, he's really starting to look like he's returning to form. But you do have to sort of take a step back and remember, this is the worst team in baseball, like hands down. There might even be a few AAA teams that could give the Rockies a run for their money in terms of if they went head to head. It's really that bad. So you do have to kind of reset and now refocus and say, look, you got the Rays coming up now for four games before you hit the break. That's going to be a test. I know the Rays have been stumbling, but they've been better than you over the course of the entire year. So this is now the biggest test the Red Sox are going to face. And, you know, Bregman supposedly is going to be back this weekend. He's going to be activated. I don't know if that's going to happen tomorrow or Friday, but he's going to be activated at some point. So you will get more, you know, firepower in your lineup. But can the starting pitching hold up? Can the bullpen hold up the way it has been? I think those are the biggest questions heading into the weekend. And for me, I'll be happy if the Red Sox split, but I'd feel a lot better if they took three out of four and really went into the break with some momentum. How do you guys feel?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I think for me to feel good about this, especially going into the break, I think last year we were 10 over 500, I believe. I think we were like 53 and 43 when we went into the break. Obviously, we can't do that going to the break this year. So they got to take three out of four, especially with just the momentum we've been carrying, six in a row. If we take three out of four, at that point, I believe we'd be tied with the Rays for the same record, or we'd be one game better than them. I'd feel a lot better about this. But back to a point you guys said, like, I know this isn't real life. I don't expect to score 10 runs per game. I don't think any team should expect that unless you play in the Rockies. But with that being said, you know, I didn't realize how poor the American League in general, but even the MLB across the league this year, is when it comes to teams above a record above 500 teams. It's only five teams, and they're marginally better than us with records over teams that are 500 or above. And if you take away the Astros and the Tigers, we're really not that much different than other teams in the American League. When you add the National League, I think we're like the ninth best. So we're still in the top third of all of MLB. So I agree it's not real life, but I also don't think we're necessarily as far off from being somewhat competitive in a pretty watered down American League and really MLB when it comes to beating teams that are over 500.
The thing that concerns me the most is you don't want the front office looking at this model and thinking that this is the next 10 years. This is how we can do it with platooning all of your lefty prospects, except for Anthony, who's hitting lefties very well, by the way. Looks like very much like the number one prospect in all of Major League Baseball. I mean, you look at that start that Jackson Holliday had last year and still continues to have, and Anthony is just far and away better equipped to handle Major League pitching. But I gotta stop saying nice things for a second, though. So you don't want them believing that this is real life, because I don't think it's sustainable. And yeah, you needed the two of the worst teams, one of them definitely the worst team, to get four games above 500. You know, the fact that we don't have bona fide everyday guys in this lineup is a big reason why we're not leading the division like many of us thought we could preseason. I don't think any of us foresaw the Devers trade. I didn't have a high expectations for Tristan Casas, but I didn't think he would be gone, you know, in early to mid May. And so I just figured, you know, we would have a lot of everyday guys out there, but we haven't done anything to address the imbalance that we have. We're just riding it out with platoons. We have a manager who was essentially a utility guy who seems to have his dream roster right now of mostly utility guys. And I don't know, for some reason, that's a soft spot for him. And so when things get flipped upside down here, I don't know if we're necessarily going to finish the year sub 500, but I don't expect we're going to be a playoff team. As Nick the Voice pointed out last night, you do have the fourth strongest strength of schedule. You've got the Cubs, Phillies, and Dodgers in some order as your first three series out of the All-Star break. And so I just want to get back to real life. And I'm not confident that the trade deadline is going to produce meaningful steps in that process. I don't think that's what's going to happen. So it's just more of the same. And then I don't know if I pointed this out last night or two nights ago or whatever. How many Red Sox players right now in the lineup are playing their natural position? It's just the Trevor Story and Seydon Rafaela, who had to be benched tonight for some reason. That's basically it. I guess you'll get Bregman back and he'll be your everyday third baseman as he has been his whole career, but you're not going to fix the errors. You're for the next 5 years, you're still going to be the worst defensive team in MLB if you keep operating that way. So I'm a little bit annoyed. I don't view what we're seeing right now as sustainable. And that's my rant.
It's a fair point. And I agree with you that I don't want the front office to take the Colorado series as like reality, because it's not. It's, you know, unfortunately, you play a series like that, it's kind of just batting practice for this team. And you saw a little bit of, you know, the champagne problem that the Red Sox have right now, which is with Yoshida back, you know, they have too many outfielders. The logjam has now presented itself. It's now a real thing. And Yoshida was good tonight. Three hits, had his first double. Like, he did exactly what Masataka Yoshida does. He puts the bat on the ball. He doesn't strike out, but he has to take that DH spot. We talked about it a little bit last night on the show that you can't stick him in the field. You just can't. You can't throw a baseball. This is worse than when you had JD Martinez, and Martinez was bitching about wanting to play the field, and everyone knew he was terrible at it. But you throw him out there a couple of times, especially at Fenway, you hope he doesn't burn you. Yoshida, you can't even do that. So he's stuck at DH, and then every game it's going to be someone of one of Yoshida, Duran, Anthony, Rafaela, Abreu is going to have to sit. And tonight was Rafaela. Did it burn the Red Sox? No, because you're playing Colorado. You put up a 10 spot on Antonio Senzatella, who's one of the worst pitchers in baseball and the worst bullpen in baseball. How's that going to work when you're playing a team like the Rays, who are more competitive, and Kevin Cash is going to be trying to maneuver his way through your lineup, you know, as much as Alex Cora is trying to do the opposite, right? How's that going to translate when you play a team like the Cubs or the Dodgers who are coming up? So the logjam is real. I know fans are sick of hearing about it, but it's real, and it is kind of a problem. So when you talk about the trade deadline and, you know, you're sort of worried that it's not going to fix anything, I mean, it depends. It depends on what they decide to do. And, you know, I sort of made the case last night that I think they need to strategically sell at least one of those outfielders. And I think all the smoke is in Jaron Duran's direction. I just think that makes the most sense, because you can't do this every night where you're sitting a guy like Sadon Rafaela, who has been your hottest hitter over the last month. I don't see how that's sustainable. Even if Alex Cora loves platooning, it, at some point, someone's got to step in and say, you can't do this over the course of a full season or even half a season if you want to make the playoffs. It's just one of these nights you're going to bench the wrong guy, and it's going to come back and bite you.
Yeah, I don't disagree with what either of you said. This is certainly not sustainable over the course of a season. I guess my point is that there's enough good in the mix that you have a baseline. If you add the right positional players, if we had a legitimate first baseman and an everyday second baseman, it's a completely different team, right? And that's if you, even without doing anything to the outfield, granted, you will have to do something with the outfield to acquire those types of players, which I don't know if we're going to. If I was a betting man, I would say no. But, you know, I think going into the Rays series, it's going to tell us a lot of the direction of possibly what's going to happen at the trade deadline. We're 4-2 against the Rays this year. We've played relatively well against them. They have been the overall better team over the course of the season. But if we could take 3 out of 4, carry that momentum, and someone in the front office says, hey, you know what? We have a pretty good core. We got a plethora of outfielders. You know, maybe we can make a move, make a quote-unquote, everyone's using the term baseball trade, and bring in, you know, an everyday player that's going to help, you know, be a part of the culture fit and a building block. I mean, it would be great. Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not.
So I put a poll on Twitter earlier, and I didn't really know what the results would be, but it seems like a lot of the nerds on Twitter are open to moving Duran, which is insane if you think about it in the sense that he was an MVP candidate last year. I think he was 4th in WAR in all of MLB. And he's obviously regressed and kind of fallen out of favor with, like, the nerdier analytical faction of the Red Sox fan base, and maybe with some casual fans as well. So I expected this, when this poll to come out in, you know, a large enough sample size to have voted, I figured it would be about 60-40 in favor of trading Duran or vice versa. I just didn't think it was going to be this massive gap. And for the record, I would trade him for an impact bat. And the example I've been giving all week is for a Fernando Tatis type guy, I would put Duran or Bray into that trade, or just a righty bat that's really gonna transform the middle of this lineup. That's what I would trade Jaron Duran for, and possibly an ace pitcher. But I don't think any of that's going to happen. I think if you move him, it's going to probably be a prospect-laden package. And so that's how I framed the poll. I said, if Duran is traded for a package of prospects, I said, is that totally acceptable or totally unacceptable? 84.2% said that that would be totally unacceptable. So that's broad. And our following perhaps isn't super representative of the whole fan base, but I don't think it's that far off if it is. So, and you're seeing the power stroke tonight and last night. He hit the furthest home run of any Red Sox hitter at Fenway Park this season. And I maybe even the furthest of any hitter. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I feel like, you know, when it comes down to Duran versus Abreu, I still think Duran is the safer bet for the next few years. I really feel that way.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you could see my hashtag, how I feel about it. And I was also part of the 84%. I think when you mentioned prospects, I think that's why it was probably such a large gap. I think if you had mentioned not even a Tatis, because I think if you put, like, would you put Duran in the middle of a Tatis package? It's probably 84% everyone's on board.
Right.
But if you went even somewhere down the middle where we're not talking prospects, but we're not talking Tatis, we're talking about a middle of the line player, whether it's starting pitching or a positional player, I think that's where it gets a little bit more divided and it might start swinging the pendulum the other way with some of these nerds, Statcast people. But what I would say with Duran and Abreu, I agree with you. I think Duran's by far the safer bet, especially if you're serious about winning. Because if we're serious about winning, we have to do it quickly. Because, you know, Bregman's not going to be around forever if he's going to be a part of that winning long term. And you don't want to waste the prime years of some of the people that we're starting to hand money to while they're still relatively young. I think his floor is much higher than Abreu's. I think, yeah, long term, Abreu's ceiling's probably higher. Because I do think the tools that Duran brings are going to diminish over the next couple of years as he starts to get into his early 30s. He's not going to be as fast. He's not going to be as disruptive. His bat might even become a little bit weaker. And then maybe he doesn't look as attractive. But I still think that his floor is so much higher than Abreu. He's super streaky. Yeah, he's got power, but I just don't see him as an everyday hitter consistently. So for that reason, I'm keeping Duran out of the two. What do you think, Jason?
So I'm part of the 16% then, because to me that would be acceptable. But I do put a caveat on that. I don't want just junk prospects. Like, I don't want it. What I'm hoping for is, so in my opinion, you're not going to get a Tatis for Jaron Duran, even if you attach a prospect to him. Like, you're just not going to get him. San Diego's not going to part with Fernando Tatis just because you offer them Jaron Duran and, like, Miguel Blaz. Like, that's... You'd have to offer them Roman Anthony straight up. And then even then, it would probably still be a discussion. You're not going to get, what's the other name I saw? Acuna. Like, someone on Sports Radio this week said, oh, they should try and get Acuna because the Braves aren't going anywhere. The Braves are not going to give up Ronald Acuna for Jaron Duran. Acuna is still younger than Duran. People forget that. Like, and they've got him signed for another couple of years. Like, no, if anything, Atlanta's going to try to reset and build around a guy like Acuna. So, to me, if you're looking at trading Jaron Duran, you're looking at, like, tier two impact players. Like a guy we talked about last night, Eugenio Suarez. You could probably get him for Jaron Duran, but I wouldn't want to do that because Suarez is 34 and he's a rental. So that would be, that's, you're losing value on that. What I want them to do is go get, like, a James Wood. Like, James Wood was a prospect when Preller traded him to the Nationals for Juan Soto. Now James Wood is one of the best players in baseball, and he's like 20 years old. Go get your version of him or Jackson Churio when the Brewers traded for him. Again, he was 20 years old, he was a prospect, and now he's a centerpiece of their lineup. Go get someone like that. Get a stupid GM who's desperate at the deadline for an impact bat, which Duran is, and go get a guy like that who can become a cornerstone for you for the future. Maybe it's a cornerstone first baseman. Right? Maybe it's like a Jack Caglione or something. Like, go get a guy like that. That's what I want them to do. If it's a, you know, a package of prospects that's headlined by a guy like that, then yeah, that is acceptable to me. Because at the end of the day, someone has to be traded. This is not negotiable. The Red Sox don't have a choice. Someone's got to go. And it's probably not going to be Yoshida, because no one wants to take on the contract. You'd have to eat money to do it. And I don't think the Red Sox have any interest in eating any more money. It's not going to be Sadon, because you locked him up. And frankly, he's turning into a superstar center fielder. Obviously, it's not going to be Roman Anthony. So now it becomes, it's either Abreu or Duran. Personally, I would rather keep Abreu. I like the fact that he's a couple years younger. I think that if Cora gives him the opportunity, he can show that he can hit lefties. He's obviously a superior defender, already won a Gold Glove. And I think Duran's defense is really overrated. I think you're starting to see that this year. I think Duran is the guy that makes the most sense. And yeah, it sucks to see a guy like that go. I like Duran as a player. I like him as a guy. He's a spark plug in that offense. Obviously, I think he's pretty well liked by his teammates. But at the end of the day, he's about to be 29 years old. And speed is one of the biggest parts of his game. If that starts to decline, which in my opinion, it already has, then he's going to become less and less valuable by the year. And I just think right now, you've got to make that trade while his value is still at least representative, because it's not even as high as it was last offseason. Like last offseason, you guys mentioned it. He was the fourth best player in the American League. This year, he's way down. And a lot of his numbers have gone way down. So hopefully, if the Padres are interested in him and Preller is going to get stupid again and offer up another type of James Wood prospect that probably San Diego, knowing them, they've got in their organization, I'm doing it. Again, you've got to solve the logjam somehow. And if you can get a young centerpiece player like that who's like 21 years old and is hopefully a first baseman or a second baseman or something, then that would be a huge hit. So unfortunately, I'm against you guys on this one. I'm part of the 16% that if it's a trade like that, I'm totally for it. Now, if they get a package like they got for Devers back, I'll be pissed. That is not good enough. They need to get, like, again, it's got to be a stud prospect like that. But as long as it is, yeah, I'm okay with it.
Hey, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. Build a customized renter's policy with American Family Insurance, so you can protect your tandem bike on the go.
Thief!
Oh, he is struggling with that two-seater. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Some exclusions may apply. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Just for the record... Just for the record, real quick, my package for Tatis was Duran, and then Fitz or Hauk, James Tibbs the third, and we take on all the money. $289 million is where I would start. If one more prospect has to get thrown in, depending on who it is, I mean, it could be a top 6 through 10 guy. I would do that. And you know, and then when you look at Tatis versus Devers, Tatis gives you a lot defensively. He's actually a very good defensive outfielder. But offensively, they both impact the team the same exact way. So I just thought that was a decent starting point. And I think with Tibbs being a lefty, I don't know. I don't know how he really fits long term. Maybe he still does. Maybe he has good numbers versus lefties. Who knows? And if Alex Cora ain't the manager, he'll have a shot. But there's that. Second thing I just want to throw out there. If we're doing business with the Braves, I don't even want Ronald Acuna. He's not even my first choice. Give me Matt Olson. Okay. That's my first baseman and he's healthier. I don't know how a young guy like Acuna blew out two separate ACLs. And so I just have some serious, I'm pessimistic for Braves fans on what he's going to be in his 30s based on what we've seen in our 20s. So maybe everyone will say I'm insane for not wanting Acuna, but I'd rather have Olson at this point. And I think Duran for Olson, you'd probably have to throw in a pitcher because they're so depleted, but I would do it if the Braves wanted to do business.
Yeah, I was going to ask for either one of you if, because I know we took Betts in the War Room too. Again, I don't think they're trading Tatis, but if they did, if it included where they requested both of them, would you still do it?
Yes, but I'd rather not.
So you're saying they're requesting both Duran and Abreu?
Yeah, if they want, yeah, Duran and Abreu.
I mean, they're
both young, controllable contracts at this point. They may want to unload Tatis theoretically.
Would the Red Sox still be eating 100% of the money?
If you probably, because you're not going to give away as much on, as far as prospects at that point if you're giving away both.
Let me throw this out there real quick. Part of why I think this is viable is that, and I think I mentioned this earlier in the week, and I wrote about it on our blog, bastardsofboston.com. Part of why I think this is viable is 2 years ago, the Padres ownership had to take out a $50 million loan halfway through the season just to cover their payroll. Okay, because they went on that drunken spending spree, the previous winter. And then you're having a family feud in the front off, within the ownership group on who the control person will be. Most Padres fans, from what I can tell, think the widow of the previous owner should be the control person, but it's actually one of the surviving brothers. And there's lawsuits going on right now to settle that. And they haven't really spent big money outside of the Parker Meadows extension, which happened, I think, at the beginning of spring training. But the last couple of winters, not a lot of money has been spent. So they could free up almost $300 million here by moving Tatis and still getting an impact guy. And that's why I think it's viable. Obviously, they're not moving Bogarts. He's worse than the Yoshida deal at this point. And Machado is still, if you pull up his save on page, it's deep red from top to bottom. Still at 33 years old, one of the best players in the league, but under control through age 40. So not an ideal contract that people want to be taking on. So Tatis is the movable guy if they want to do it. And I'm not saying they do, but they're really interested in Duran. So we'll see.
So you would do it reluctantly, Terry, but you would do it. Would you do it, Jason?
Me personally, I would do it, but it would be if they wanted a third prospect, it's going to be like a Hunter Dobbins or, it's not, I'm not giving you anything of true value. Like, I'm not going to give you Luis Perales or the password or Peyton Tolley. Like, no, if they demand a third prospect as part of that deal, it's going to be someone that I think can maybe be a number five in their rotation, but that's about it, right? Like that's sort of where I draw the line. So me personally, yes, I would do it. I don't think John Henry in a million years would ever do it. I mean, you're going to ask him to take on that much money when he just shed pretty much all of that. And, I think was pretty happy to do so. I don't think he'd want to do it.
Well, look at it this way. You'd have Tatis, Rafaela, and Anthony as your everyday outfield. And you're going to have to figure out what to do with the password. Like that's how log jammed we're still going to be without Duran and Abreu. But suddenly your lefty problem has gone away. Your whole outfield can deal with that. So it's just, it's one of the reasons why I probably still would, but I think you can get away with not doing it. And then whichever one you don't move, perhaps either at the deadline or this winter, you use that extra outfield depth to get a upper rotation guy as part of the trade. That's why I do that. And here's a hot take for you. I don't want to trade Hunter Dobbins, at least until this winter. I want to see the rest of the season. I think we could have the next John Lester there. I don't know. I think the ceiling is higher than some think, but it's early, and I just want to see more. And he's going to pitch on Friday, I believe, in this Tampa series, so we'll see. But I just like his mental makeup. He just seems like he can handle it. And I like that about Fitz too, but We'll see. Dobbins has impressed me a lot.
I agree with you on the Dobbins thing. When you said, Jason, that you would throw in Dobbins, that's actually probably where I would draw the line. And for the same reason you just said, Terry, like if I'm the GM, if I'm Breslow, I'm selling to the Padres. Hey, you're getting these two guys. You get to try them both out. Whichever one you don't like better, you can flip them and accrue more assets, right? And like sell it that way where you may not even have to throw in much more. And if you do, it's a very low-level prospect that we're not going to miss.
Yeah. No, that's fair. Now, I'm probably just a little bit lower on Dobbins than you guys are and then, you know, maybe some other people are. I think he's good. Like, I don't think Dobbins stinks by any means. Again, I think that he belongs in a major league rotation. I'm just not sure about the ceiling. Like, I think Fitz might have a little bit of a higher ceiling than him. So maybe that's why I just prefer Fitz over Dobbins right now. But you guys are right. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're getting both Abreu and Duran in that deal, I think then you should look a little bit lower, you know, in the farm system, you know, if they want to tack on a third. And just real quick about the password, I think there's a chance that he's not fully ready until Yoshida's contract is almost up anyway. Like, I think he just got to AAA. He's looked pretty good down there. But I think he may not be fully major league ready until another year or two. And at that point, Yoshida's almost done. You could even just DFA him at that point. And then you still don't have a logjam problem. Either the password becomes your DH or maybe Roman Anthony moves to DH or, you know, Tatis, whatever you decide to do. A trade like that definitely does fix the logjam like instantly, which is a really appealing idea. I just, you know, is San Diego willing to do it? Is John Henry willing to take on the money? I'm just not sure, but that would be very interesting to see Tatis in a Red Sox uniform. Real quick, another name that came up on the trade market. This was a rumor that came out today that the Red Sox are monitoring Twins starter Joe Ryan. So the Twins are 2 games under .500. They pretty much have no shot at their division. The Tigers are just running away with it. Detroit's the best team in baseball right now. So the Twins may be looking to sell a little bit, and Joe Ryan's name has come up. A lot of teams are interested in him. He's 29 years old. He's had a good year with them, 8-4 on the year. He's under team control until 2028. So that also makes him very appealing. He was one of these kind of late bloomers that the Rays got rid of. So would you guys be interested in Joe Ryan, given that it's probably going to take prospects and probably a decent prospect package to get him? Or is that a guy that you're sort of just, nah, you know, let's move on to someone else?
What do you think, Terry?
Well, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I hadn't been watching any Twins this year, obviously. And for some reason, I thought he was injured. And then I pulled up his logs, and he's having a really good year, you know, an ERA in the mid twos and stuff. So it must have been late last year when he was hurt. But the short answer is yes, I would absolutely be interested. You know, you could, I'd still want the lineup addressed, obviously. And I'm not saying Tatis for sure, but a big bat to be added to that lineup, an everyday bat, particularly a righty. So if both things happen, I'm back as far as maybe we could do something here in 2025. And so, yeah. I mean, who wouldn't want Joe Ryan in this lineup? And but here's, I'm skeptical that they're really going to do something of that level. I mean, you've got Crochet, Giolito, and Bayo as your 1-2-3. You still have Houck, Dobbins, Buehler, Fitz to figure out those last two spots. And I think you could figure out those last two spots with those four people. So it just seems far-fetched to me that they're going to put a package together to go after him. But if they do it, I'll be pretty supportive of it.
What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I'm in support of it, especially now. Admittedly, I didn't realize he had that much team control left. For some reason, I was under the impression it was through 2026, which had me a little bit skeptical But now knowing that, I also realize we're going to have to give up a lot more if we're going to get him in a trade. I think it's going to depend on what we give up. I mean, looking at his stats, innings pitched, strikeouts, I mean, it's definitely impressive. This is by far on trajectory for his best season of his career. I think that's probably the only pause for concern that I would have is looking at some of his previous years. I mean, he's definitely had some good seasons, but I would say it looks more like, you know, bottom number two, top number three starter, not necessarily that bona fide number two, which we've been looking for. Granted, the season he's having now, I mean, he's kind of like almost a lower level one at this point. So if we can get him and the price is right, I'm all for it.
Let me put it this way. If the Twins ask for a prospect package headlined by The Password and or Peyton Tolley, do you still want him? Because I think that's what it's going to take. I think it's going to be either your best new pitching prospect in Tolley or your best offensive prospect who's not in the majors now in The Password.
So I would entertain that deal. And it's going to sound weird because I know we've been saying that if we're going to make a move, we're going to make it sooner. I would almost prefer to wait closer to the deadline, have a better idea of realistically where we're going to be at the end of the season. If we really like go into the All-Star break and then come out somehow hot and win more games than we expect, and we're in a good position and we've got a little bit of a cushion as far as the wild card race and really like securing that number two spot, never mind number three, I would do it. If we're wavering, I don't know if I do it.
That's an excellent point, Chris, because if we're not competitive at the deadline, now he's only going to be here for two postseasons if we're lucky.
If you're lucky, yeah.
And so I would have a little bit more pause, you know, if that did happen. Yeah, here's another thing too, and this adds to my skepticism. You look at Breslow's record with trades. The only one that meets the criteria of a Joe Ryan acquisition is the Crochet trade. Okay. All those guys we got last year, James Paxton, Luis Garcia, Lucas Sims, Danny Jansen, those were trash packages. We didn't give up anybody. There was no consequence whatsoever in the guys we traded for in terms of what we gave up. The consequence was they were all trash and we missed the postseason. And Breslow botched it big time, in my opinion, because we were, I think, three or four games above 500 at the deadline. So all that's trash. You can look at the fits in Weissert for Alex Verdugo trade. It's worked out well, generally speaking, but still it was not it wasn't a consequential trade. Even if those guys were complete busts, that entire trade was an afterthought. And Verdugo's not even in the league right now. He just got DFA'd by the Atlanta Braves. So that trade doesn't play. Like, I'm not, even though Breslow won it, you know, it wasn't a high risk thing. It was just a roll of the dice and it worked out. And then lastly, the Narvaez trade. Again, none of us knew who he was. Nobody had heard of Narvaez before we got him. And we gave up some pitching prospect. His first name's Elmer, and I forget what his last name is. An Hispanic guy. I think he's from the Dominican. Don't quote me on that. But a guy of no consequence whatsoever. Yeah, Breslow won the trade, but it wasn't a critical trade. So what I'm getting at here is the Joe Ryan deal is, yeah, you're going to be giving up serious assets where there could be bad consequences if, you know, if it doesn't go right, if we miss the postseason anyway, or if Joe Ryan gets hurt again. I keep saying what I'm getting at here. I don't know if Craig Breslow has the skills or the balls to execute that trade.
Yeah, and you might be right. And I think that's why, you know, to Chris's point, it's important to wait until the last 2 days before the deadline and really see where you are, because it's easy now to say, yep, we should be buyers and, you know, we should go all in because we just had this great series against the Rockies. Well, that only means so much. Again, you know, we keep harping on it, but your second half schedule is the fourth toughest in all of MLB. So, you know, the real test is coming. If they get swept by the Cubs, or they get swept by the Dodgers, then we're looking at this totally differently. We're not looking at going and, you know, giving up four prospects for Joe Ryan. We're looking at, okay, how much can we sell Jaron Duran for now? Because we just fell out of it, you know, and that could very well happen in the next 2 weeks after the break. So, you know, see what it looks like, especially with Bregman coming back, you know, with Yoshida back in the mix, fully healthy now. Your starting pitching seems to have been turned around, but you still have a lot of unanswered questions. And I don't want Breslow to say he's in buy or sell mode right now. I think he has to be in wait and see mode for at least another 2 weeks and see what happens with Joe Ryan's market, see what happens with Jaron Duran's market, and see what the team does. Because the team could stay level and still kind of be in it and still kind of sniffing that third wild card, or they might completely drop out of it. And then you sit there and you go, okay, they are who we thought they were, kind of thing, right? And we're looking at selling again. So it's tough right now because coming off a sweep, you know, the vibes are really good, but it's a sweep of the Rockies. We got bigger tests coming up. And I agree with you about Breslow. I don't know if he's capable of making that really hard, big move and still winning the trade. The Crochet trade was easy. I mean, that, you know, everyone knew Crochet was available. It was just a matter of who can get to him first, and Breslow did. You know, with Joe Ryan and any other guys are going to be available, you're going to be competing with a lot more teams on that. Can he actually pull a fast one and get, you know, get to those guys first? I'm not sure he can. So big test coming up for him, big test coming up for the team. We'll see how it goes. Obviously, we got the All-Star break coming up. So we'll be without baseball for at least a couple of days while that's going on. But we got the Rays series this weekend, and that's going to be a big one. Let's look at the first matchup of that one tomorrow night. We got Walker Buehler going for us, and for the Rays, they've got Taj Bradley, one of their better young pitchers. So tough test right out of the gate. Bradley's a good pitcher. The Rays have been stumbling a little bit, but we know that they always put up a fight against the Red Sox. So, Terry, how do you feel about tomorrow night?
Buehler looked okay against the Nationals, but it was the Nationals who cleaned house in their front office. And quite frankly, I'm really jealous about that. But Bradley has looked okay. I mean, he did get thumped pretty good, I guess, by the Orioles two starts ago. But, you know, three earned against Minnesota, no earned runs against Kansas City. Not that they're playing super well. I don't think he's going to have a hard time outdueling Walker Buehler here. And we're not catching the Rays at the right time. So we'll see. I mean, if this offense can just keep their foot on the accelerator, I mean, it's a winnable game, but gun to my head, I'm going to take the Rays.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, as positive as I was this episode, you know, Buehler had to be the first pitcher in the series coming up. And I take my 8-year-old son in a game against the Rays over Walker Buehler at this point. So, yeah, if the offense can continue and even put up half the runs they've been putting up, that would be nice. But, I mean, we've seen losses this year against the Rays where we've put up 8 and still lost 9-8, 10-8. So, gun to my head, yeah, I think Walker Buehler's cooked for us at this point. So
we're a sadistic crew tonight. Any guns going to your head, Jason?
No, not on this one. This one seems pretty cut and dry. This feels like a Red Sox put up a 4 spot in the first inning, and then Buehler puts up a 6 spot in his first inning. So, yeah, I don't have a ton of confidence in Walker Buehler right now. I don't know how anyone can. I think the Red Sox offense will score, but I just think Buehler is going to puke on his cleats again like he has been. So, not feeling great about it. I still am pretty optimistic we can at least split this weekend, but I'm not feeling great about tomorrow night. So unfortunately, the vibes are going to go down Thursday night, but we'll see how it goes. So with that, we will wrap up this episode. We'll be back with you tomorrow night after the Rays game to break down whatever the hell happens with Walker Buehler against Taj Bradley. And we'll be there the rest of the weekend as well to cover that series and head into the All-Star break, hopefully with some good vibes. So everyone have a good night. Take care.